when a three-time champ is having one of his worst seasons in a touring car, you have to ask, what's going wrong with Toyota?
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast, and we're going to take a deeper dive today into the world of Toyota.
Yes.
It's been a turbulent ride, shall we say, in the last couple of seasons since they've changed over to Toyota Gazoo Racing, become a manufacturer outfit. So we're going to take a look through not just Toyota and the BTCC, we're going to look through Toyota in their main avenues of motorsport, basically. So we're going to cover loads of different areas.
Cover.
We've got rallying, we've got endurance, we've got GTs, and also obviously touring cars as well. And yeah, we're going to have a little deep dive into each section. You might recognise some drivers that we pick out. We tell you about the successes and the slight pitfalls that they've had in different formula, just to try and explain or maybe even work out what's going wrong with Toyota this season.
Yeah,
over the last couple.
We hope to answer, have Toyota ever been any good in motorsport? Because they're not a name that you necessarily, you know, you think Ferrari, you think even to a degree Peugeot, and you think of the Le Mans stuff. Toyota doesn't quite roll off the tongue in the same way. So, pop your speeders on, like us, and let's get ready to dive into the world of Toyota.
I must say, it's quite unusual, because Toyota is a brand, biggest in the world by commercial value.
Is it?
With the amount of cars that they sell worldwide, they are the top-selling car brand.
Just see, rolling across the bottom of the screen, this has not been fact-checked. Okay, fair enough, I'll take your word for it.
So, you'd think with that sort of like infrastructure that's behind them, they should have some sort of good heritage with motorsport.
So I'm going to start with an emission for a start. You mentioned all that. Yep. And also they're big pioneers in the electric market.
Yes. Definitely.
Yet they're not, or never have been, part of Formula E, which I found absolutely amazing. I sat down to do some research for this video. I thought, let's check their, you know, they're partaking in Formula E, how they've got on there. Never entered. So which I found absolutely surprising, because as I say, you think electric cars, you know, you think perhaps some of the Japanese market, perhaps the German market as well, in particular, and obviously America now with Tesla and that kind of stuff. But I found it strange that one of the pioneers of electric technology hasn't entered the electric series.
I do wonder whether it's come at slightly the wrong time for them, because I know Toyota and BMW as a brand are actually two brands that are actually stepping away from the electric car side of things to focus more on hydrogen fuel cells and synthetic fuels and stuff like that. So they're really pioneers in the world of moving it on and the infrastructure behind it. But I think Formula E's come just at the wrong time for them.
Potentially so. Right, I'm going to start off the championship I understand the least, because the scoring system is mad. The category system is mad. So I'm going to have a quick look in their recent history in GT. I'm only going from 2020 onwards.
Yep.
Because that's really, they've only been sort of a main competitor in the GT in that era. They've had four seasons in the GT in that era. Three under the Toyota Gazoo Racing Supra team banner, and one entered through Speedworks as well. So Speedworks has entered in 2020. You'll recognise one of these drivers if you're a touring car fan, and you'll recognise one of them as well. That year they drove a GR Supra GT4 in the GT4 category of GT. They don't race in the GT3 because...
Basically, there isn't a necessarily qualifying car that they can put into that category. So in that category, you'll see McLarens, you'll see Aston Martins, you'll see Ferraris, you'll see all these sort of like
BMW's weirdly low.
Yeah, top end performance supercars that Toyota don't really have the car that fits nicely into that category. Hence why they go for the GT4. There's less modification in the GT4 category, so it's closer to the road version. And I think that's why they use the Supra in that.
Fair enough. The drivers for 2020 were James Kell and Sam Smelt, who has been in the touring cars. Yep. The best result they got that season overall was a 15th, and in their constructors, they finished 6th and last. So I would give that as a mediocre kind of season. First one in looked at. You know, you got that was in the midst of the Speedworks sort of merge with Toyota Gazoo Racing and in COVID year as well. Yes. So you have to make allowances. 2021 saw them back with the Toyota Supra, this time under Team Toyota Gazoo Racing. Let me know if you recognise any of these drivers. John Ferguson, Scott McKenna and Jamie Caroline were the...
Jamie Caroline are recognised.
Okay.
Used to be a Ginetta racer, and I think also did a little bit of single-seater work.
Well, their best result that season was 12th, and they finished 9th out of 10th in the Constructors. So again, I'm giving it an orange. I've scored these red, orange and green. It's okay, but it's not spectacular either. 2022, I'd argue, is their best season, the GT4s, again under the Toyota Gazoo Supra and under the Gazoo racing banner. Tom Edgar, Jack Mitchell and Jordan Collard, I'm not sure if there's any relation, were the three drivers. Their best finish that season was a 13th, which was a winning class. And the constructors, they finished 5th out of 12. So a good season. That's a much more competitive season. Then weirdly, they didn't race at all in 2023. So you have a good season like that, and then you don't come back for 2023. Very strange.
Yeah, weird things like that do happen in motorsport. And when you've got a manufacturer backing like that, it is even more strange to have that happen. If it was more of an independent entry using that Toyota Supra, then you kind of understand it. Maybe there were money issues or something else behind the scenes. But to have a dropout for one season as a manufacturer is very unusual.
And then 2024, they returned, but not for a full season. You may have seen this car at events. Basically, they joined up with the Army to look at jobs within motorsport and the Army, etc., etc. And I think we've seen at Alton Park, there was a car decked out in that style of livery. Again, they entered the Super GT4. The drivers that year were Kavi Jundu, Dan Vaughan, Michael O'Brien, and Benjamin Tusting. Now, I think some of those had links to the overall aim of the collaboration, so weren't
almost,
necessarily professional
like
racing drivers.
We used to have the Help for Heroes team within touring cars.
And that year, the best result was 20, which was a third in class, and they finished 12th overall, but not a full season. So again, I've gone for an orange. So to sum up their results in GT, really, haven't competed at the top level, which is obviously GT3. Obviously, you've given the reasons for that, but then you also think to yourself, if Toyota are the biggest brand in the world, as you've so rightly pointed out, or potentially correctly pointed out, you'd have thought they could build a, but are they going to build a car specific to go in that? It's difficult, isn't it?
Well, but when you look into the other classes that they're in within motorsport, I can kind of understand why they're not also in GT3.
But then is there any point being in GT4?
Possibly, possibly not. I can certainly understand why they went in with Speedworks as a customer team. And I think, I don't know whether teams like, or companies like Toyota go down the route of putting cars like the Supra into a motorsport series because they go, it's great publicity for the car.
Yeah, people like that. I hate the Supra.
I know.
I think it's ugly. I much prefer the, is it the Evo they have?
It's also a BMW underneath, but that's a discussion for another day.
What's the other sort of two-seater they have? Is it the, it starts with an E. Anyway, it's much nicer.
Yeah, so it could be a marketing ploy from them. It could be a case of that's just the most suitable car for that series and they want to be visible in that series. And they don't really have a very suitable car for the GT3s.
No, I suppose if the Supra is your flagship, quote, supercar or luxury car, if you want to call it, it needs to have a presence in motorsport. That is true. Overall, I would rate their GT success as fine. Not good, not bad, but fine.
So we're going to move on to World Endurance Championship, and Toyota have got quite a significant history in this. They debuted in the WEC, or WEC, as I'm going to refer to it, in 2012, and they returned to top-level endurance racing with the Toyota TSO30 Hybrid under Toyota Gazoo Racing, as we all know. And that marked their re-entry back into endurance racing after 1999, when they previously were in Le Mans. So running through sort of like the timeline of the cars that they've had, they've been running pretty much all the way through since 2012 now. There's been 5 different iterations of the Toyota hypercar. So these are prototype cars that are built to do endurance events from as short, I think, a 2 or 3 hour events all the way up to do the Le Mans 24 hours. There's also Nürburgring 24 hours and such like.
Sexton CV 300s.
And Spa 12 hour, I believe.
Yes, yes.
And they've had quite a considerably good amount of success within this. So coming in, looking more specifically at Le Mans 24, because that is the flagship event that you get with World Endurance. Yeah. Everyone knows about the 24 hours of Le Mans if you're into your motorsport, and they've done quite well. 2018 to 2013, 2018 to 2023, they had six consecutive victories. And I'm going to name a few drivers here that you might have heard
of. Even I've heard of these, and I'm not as into the world of motorsport as you are.
So Alonso, Buemi and Nakajima, all ex-F1 or current F1 drivers.
El yes, plan.
That is Fernando Alonso.
El plan.
They won it in consecutive years in 2018 and 2019. Alonso then stepped back from having done that, but he's ticked that off his list.
I assume that's Sebastian Buemi, is it?
Sebastian yes. Buemi and...
Kimi? No.
Nakajima.
Yeah.
And then Buemi and Nakajima were joined by Brendan Hartley, again, another ex-Red Bull, ex-F1 driver. In 2020, they won that then. Nakajima then took a step back and Hirakawa came in between 2021 and 2023, and the three of those won in three consecutive years there as well. Hirakawa, basically an up-and-coming talent through Japan, lots of motorsport series out there, just like we have over here in the UK. They seem to breed their talent really well, and they may be names that you really haven't heard of, and then they'll just pop up onto a top drive in Europe and just hit the ground running, basically. In terms of manufacturer titles throughout the World Endurance Championship, they've been pretty successful there as well. So in 2014, they won only 2 years after coming back into endurance racing, which is a pretty good standard, because you've got teams like Audi, Porsche, now Ferrari, Cadillac and stuff like that. Big name teams coming in and they're still able to compete with those. 2018 to 19, they won that. 2019 to 2020, they won that. 2021, 2022, 2023, all took manufacturers' titles as well as winning Le Mans for a lot of those years as well. And then that they didn't just stop there. They were fairly dominant in the Drivers' Championship as well. So in 2014, Anthony Davidson, ex-F1 driver, now F1 commentator, pundit on Sky, he was joined by Sebastian Buemi.
Did he have a Sky pad with him at all times?
I don't think so.
That's a shame.
Although it would have probably helped him along the way. They won the title in 2014. And then somewhat of a drought, 4 years without a championship or driver's championship win for them until they came back and took those consecutive wins from 2018 all the way through to 2023 with some of the drivers that I'd mentioned previously. Other drivers along the way were Mike Conway, Kamui Kobayashi and... Juan Manuel Lopez, who is an ex-World Touring Car two-time champion at the very least. So they pick and choose their drivers where they want them, and they try and get the absolute best drivers that they can. And racing in WEC is a completely different style of racing to pretty much anything else that you find. One, because of the endurance side of it, and two, because of the speed that the cars are able to maintain and take through corners is absolutely ridiculous. That's why they're called hypercars. So, as I've mentioned, a few of the drivers along the way, the key drivers and team members mentioned Sebastian Buemi since 2012. So he's been there since they come back in. He's won multiple Le Mans and WEC titles. Kazuki Nakajima, retired in 2021 and quite randomly is now the vice chairman of Toyota Gazoo Europe, which is quite a role to go into from being in a top motorsport category. Obviously, Fernando Alonso winning those two Le Mans races, so like ticking it off his list. He needs to do the Indy 500 now. And
he's there.
He's got the triple crown. Kamui Kobayashi, obviously a driver previously of Sauber in F1, has now moved on in his current team principal in WEC for Toyota Gazoo Racing. And then, as I mentioned, we've got Brendan Hartley, Rio Hirakawa, Mike Conway, Jose Maria Lopez, who is that World Touring Car Multiple champion.
Isn't Nick DeVries starting to do it these days as well?
Not that I know of.
Yes, he is. He competes in the World Endurance Championship for Toyota.
Have moved over for this season.
Yes, only because I remember seeing something about him being a part of it, because he's trying to get, trying to get away back into Haas through that route.
Yeah.
But yes, he is part of the World Endurance at the moment for...
So when you look at Toyota's history throughout endurance car racing, especially from 2012 in this period that we talked about, highly, highly successful. And when you compare it to the other teams that are in and around there, no one really comes close in terms of endurance championships, whether it be driver's title, manufacturer's title, and even Le Mans wins. They were the team to beat. in recent seasons, it's been taken over by Ferrari. I think they won two on the bounce, but they're still a competitive outfit and able to do so well in this category, which then kind of makes you ask the question, why can't they transfer some of that knowledge, some of that expertise, some of that drive and technology that leads them in this series and put it into the touring cars? It's a real quandary.
Agreed. So we're agreeing that the WEC Toyota is highly successful.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take a trip back then and look at their history in Formula One. They have been a Formula One team for several years. And again, some mixed bag successes here as well. So they joined the team. I'm only going to focus on them entering as a chassis. You can't really... They did supply engines to other teams, but like Mercedes, like Ferrari do, you can't really look at how other teams use a Toyota engine to get results. And they did have some decent results. Nico Rosberg did take a podium, I think, with the Toyota Williams. He got a second in Toyota with Toyota Williams. But other than that, they had sort of engine deals with Jordan Spyker as well, which you can't really hold Toyota responsible for how they've used the engines.
Especially
there.
Within F1, there are so many different elements with aerodynamics and stuff like that, and it's not necessarily solely down to an engine. Yes, some people argue that, but there's a lot of other factors.
Although Jordan did get a podium with a Toyota engine, however, that was at the catastrophic 2005 American Grand Prix, which there'll be plenty of other channels that can cover that for you, but basically it was a complete farce in the tyre war days. So Toyota entered the competition in 2002 with drivers Mika Salo and Alec McNish. Best result for Salo was 6th, for McNish it was 7th, and overall they finished 10th out of 11th, which you'd have to say isn't a great success. But you've got to give a little bit of leeway for the fact that that was their first season in the championship. 2003, they returned and had a little bit better result. So Oliver Panis and Cristiano De Matta took over the racing responsibilities. Best results was 5th and 6th respectively. And overall, they finished 8th out of 10 constructors, but they weren't too far off 6th. So they get an orange for that season. 2004 was a really poor season where they regressed badly, unfortunately. This season, they had a mix of 4 drivers, Cristiano De Matta and Ricardo Zonta. Cristiano De Matta and Oliver Panis started the season, and then Zonta and Jarno Trulli finished the season. De Matta and Panis scored the best results, a 6th and a 5th respectively, Zonta and Trulli managing only a 10th and 11th. Of course, back in these days, it was only the top 8 that would score points in Formula 1.
And very few points were awarded.
Absolutely. It wasn't like your current world championship, which you can check out by seeing Sam's video on his alternative universe. Overall, they finished 8th out of 10 constructors with only 9 points, which is a lot of regression from where they were before. So that was a poor season. However, 2005 marked a real upturn for Toyota, and they really got stuck into the series. They had Jarno Trulli, and they had Ralf Schumacher as their main 2 drivers. Zonta had to stand in for Schumacher at one event that season. Trulli took 2 seconds, and Schumacher took 2/3, which is a really impressive achievement in that era. That 2005 was very much Ferrari versus Renault as the main 2 cars on the grid, and to be mixing of those two, Alonso and Schumacher at their pomp, is very, very impressive indeed. They finished 4th in the constructors and comfortably so, which is a really good season from them.
I believe that was also the same season that BAR Honda were also really competitive, and we know that competition there is between Toyota and Honda. You want to try and be that top dog in Japan. And they came close, but I'm pretty sure BAR beat them in the constructors that year.
2006 was another strong season. They were finished 6th overall in the constructors, but again, very competitive, with Schumacher taking a 3rd and Jarno Trulli taking a 4th. So again, able to battle it in the top echelon to the points. And then came 2007, where we saw a real step back from them. Once again, Ralf Schumacher and Jarno Trulli were the 2 drivers. Both could only manage a 6th place finish, and they finished 6th overall and were beaten by the customer Williams team, which is always an embarrassment if your customer team is able to get better results consistently over a season. So
it's a bit like McLaren and Mercedes now, really.
It is, yeah, or Haas and Ferrari. So you'd have to say that was a poorer season. Again, 6th is close to being best of the rest, but as I say, you cannot really be beaten by your customer team.
No.
So I'm going to put that down as an orange season. However, 2008-2009, we saw, again, progress in the last 2 seasons as they're in the sport. 2008 saw Jarno Trulli and Timo Glock. There goes Glock.
The infamous season.
The infamous season. Trulli of a third, Glock of a second, and a spin which handed Lewis Hamilton a title. And they were fifth and easily beat the customer team and were easily the best of the rest of that season as well. So a good return to form in 2008. And then 2009 saw Jarno Trulli and Timo Glock compete most of the season, with Kamino Kobayashi playing a smaller role as well. Both Glock and Trulli got seconds, which again, really, really impressive achievement. We're talking in today's terms, you're looking really at a team, what would you say, maybe Alpine if they weren't so bad? I'm thinking size of team these days. Obviously, they're not quite minnows like Haas are.
No, no. I would say we're probably looking...
Aston Martin, maybe?
Yeah, possibly.
Sort of mixing it in podiums and getting to be able to get podiums.
Aston Martin probably of a couple of seasons ago, where we thought, hang on, this is a decent car.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Toyota did fairly well in their time, and they're gradually starting to almost worm their way back in with the sponsorship that they're now offering for Team Haas.
Yeah, exactly. They've been involved since the removal of Gunther Steiner. The results have been mixed, it's fair to say.
Yep.
They're not quite a backmarker anymore, but they're not quite a established midfield team either. They're somewhere between the two, depending on what track it is and what drivers have got up their sleeves.
But they also don't have a massive amount of influence in the team at the moment.
No, they've only got very small stickers on the car. Although, obviously, the head of the current team principal, I believe, has got ties with the Toyota brand. It'll be interesting to see what can happen for them, particularly as the regs change next season. Mm. Whether Toyota will... There's been a lot of on and off again, from Toyota, about whether they want to come back into the sport or not. Obviously, this is the first step of potentially getting back into the sport.
I was going to say, it's an easier way for them to worm their way in and possibly buy out a team like Haas.
Struggle with sponsorship is what I was about to say. Yeah,
they
exactly,
struggle with sponsorship, and the fact that I think at some point Gene Haas is going to go, like, I've had my time in F1. It's been fairly successful when you look at Haas as a whole. And to have that possibility of a brand like that to be able to buy them out would be quite beneficial, I think, for him.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd have to overall rate their time in F1 as a success, I think. They've had more good seasons than bad.
Yep.
And certainly for a team like that to take multiple podiums is very, very impressive indeed. Particularly given at that era, as I say, it was very much a battle between two and then three teams. And McLaren Mercedes came into the picture. It was Ferrari, Renault, and McLaren Mercedes for a long dominated that era.
Yep.
And to be able to mix it with them on smaller budgets, I thought was pretty impressive, to be fair.
Yeah, sometimes some F1 teams it can just click for and it'll turn over quite nicely.
BMW Sauber being one that comes to mind. You just get a season or two where you're right, you get good drivers in a car they like and suddenly they're competing well.
Yep. Right, then we'll move on to the WRC. Which
is, for those who aren't necessarily...
The World Rally Championship. So World Rally Championship takes part all across the globe. Hence the name, but it also takes
part... Is it a rally as well?
It also takes part on many different surfaces. So they'll go and drive on snow and ice in Sweden. They'll go and drive on tough, rocky gravel roads over in places like Greece and in Spain, South America and stuff like that. And then you'll take on some tarmac events like you've got in Spain, Germany, Japan, places like that. So it really... You really have to have a car that is going to be able to be good in all sort of conditions, all sorts of weathers, all sorts of setups, and you've got to have a bunch of good drivers behind the wheel.
Absolutely.
As well. Now, Toyota in the WRC have had a pretty substantial history. So the first era that they came in was between 1973 and 1999. Their first win came in 1982 in the Côte d'Ivoire, so the Ivory Coast Rally, and that was in Toyota Celica. But they had their...
Cashmere colours.
Yeah, they had their peak success in the 1990s with the legendary Toyota Celica GT4 and the Toyota Corolla.
Mm-hmm.
A certain Mr. Carlos Sainz was quite a fond driver of a Toyota back then.
Senior, for anybody that might be confused about how Carlos Sainz hasn't aged.
So, yeah, in 1990 and 1992, Carlos Sainz took the Drivers' Championship. Juha Kankkonen took the Drivers' Championship in 1993, and then Didier Auriol in 1994. So,
good period of dominance.
5 years there of good dominance. Mm-hmm. And along with that, they took Manufacturers' Championships in 93, 94, and 99. It didn't go without scandal, however.
Motorsport scandal.
Yes, I know. In 1995, Toyota were banned for 12 months for using an illegal turbo restrictor, which basically gives them massive amount of boost when they shouldn't have been having it, hence higher top speeds and being able to win rather easily. They then withdrew from WRC after the 1999 season to go and focus on F1, hence the dates correlating, and then came back once they'd sort of like done their time in F1 and been off to do WEC and WEC and stuff like that. And they then re-entered back in 2017, led by Tommy Mäkinen, a well-renowned world rally champion. And he was actually the team manager at that point, taking it under the Toyota Gazoo Racing banner. And their first win on return came in that first year back in 2017 at Rally Sweden, which I think at that point was either the second or third event of the season on snow and ice by Jari Matti Latvala. Since then, they've won quite a bit. Sebastian Ogier took a title with them in 2021. Kalle Rovanperä took championship in 22 and 23. However, Thierry Neuville in a Hyundai ended their run in 2024. And in terms of manufacturers' championships, they've been very successful. They seem to have picked up the right combination of drivers at the same time and been able to score consistent points throughout a season, which means that in 2018, 21, 22, 23 and 24, they took the manufacturer's titles, which is quite a substantial run, really.
Massively, really, yeah. Massively.
So when you look at it, they've been pretty successful.
Certainly in the modern era, yeah.
And yes, certainly in the modern era. And currently in this season that they're in, Elfyn Evans is one of their current drivers. He tops the championship at the moment. Took quite a few wins early on in the championship. Drivers are starting to claw him back in, but that's how the rally championship works. Yeah. In terms of running in road order and stuff like that, it's a very different concept to the racing that we've talked about in the main today, because it's very much a single car on a stage trying to go as quickly as possible. There's less tactics with it in terms of wheel-to-wheel racing. You don't get any of that. So they really have to build a car that is, one, reliable, one that is going to put up with all climates and conditions, and also find a driver that is going to make pretty much the least amount of mistakes in a season. You'll find in rallying that some of these drivers are ridiculously talented. I quite honestly think, and this is probably a discussion for another day, that rally drivers are actually possibly the most talented drivers of all.
I would probably agree. The only thing I would say runs them close is endurance drivers being able to stay focused for so long. However, they are in the main driving on a track that doesn't change or evolve. Whereas,
exactly.
No, I wouldn't argue with you massively on that point at all, to be fair. So maybe it's not a discussion for another day, because I mostly agree. So.
So, yeah, since 2021, they've had a Japanese driver in there pretty much every season in Katsuta. Elfyn Evans, Welsh driver, has been there since 2021 and has been consistently good, but never really got close to challenging for the championship until this season now. And Ogier has been a part-time driver for them, or done exceptionally well, having taking the championship in 2021, he didn't actually race all the rounds, which is just sort of shows you how good he is as a driver. He's a 9-time world rally champion and very, very good at it. But yeah, Toyota and rallying go hand in hand, and again, very successful.
So then, this raises quite a few problems, because we've looked at your two in particular, which they're both still doing today,
yes,
in WRC and WEC, and they're doing quite well in both.
Yep.
Formula One, they're not really involved. I don't think you can say they are running a team in Formula One at the moment, but we've seen for their history, they've been pretty good.
Yep.
And GT, not so much, but again, they're not quite racing in the top part of GT anyway, so it's hard. Which leads us to touring cars. So, they've actually been in the series a lot longer than you might have thought. This surprised me. So I've focused on what I would call modern time touring cars, which includes the 90s, because if I don't say something about the 90s, somebody in the comments go, it was better in the 2000 era. Yes, it probably was, but we can't go back there. We haven't got time machines. Let's move on. So we first saw a Toyota in modern times enter the British touring cars in 1991, where Toyota entered the series as a manufacturer using a Carina,
lovely.
Piloted by Andy Rouse and Gary Ailes. Rouse fared the better of the two, finishing third overall, but with both drivers managed to score at least one podium. The team finished third, some 24 points behind the eventual winners of BMW. A good season. You can't really argue that. They're in the championship battle.
Yep.
They've taken the BMW close, and they've both got podiums along the way.
Not bad for a first season in there.
Exactly. The following year, they returned with three cars spread across four drivers and two champions in Hoy and Rouse. Hoy was pipped by a certain pie enthusiast that year in Tim Harvey. Toyota would once again miss out on the manufacturer's title. However, another competitive season with wins and podiums and pushing both in the teams and the manufacturer's championship. This is what you want. This is the team competing in the series.
That they've been able to bring in two drivers in Hoy and Rouse at that stage as well just shows the intent that they had as well.
Absolutely. In 1993, we saw slight regression, I'm going to say. So we saw Toyota enter two cars that year with Hoy and Bailey. They also tried to have Derek Warwick contest the Toka shootout. However, he didn't make it through. This is a weird sort of thing where they had sort of a field of drivers and the top 50% would go through and the bottom 50% dropped out. Warwick didn't quite get through and he dropped
almost
out.
Almost like trying to understand rallycross.
Yes. They both struggled this season, however, with Bailey finishing fifth, or best fifth, and Hoy seventh overall, and with only one win between them. And Toyota finished third in the manufacturer standings, but were nearly 100 points behind BMW that season. So a clear season of regression in 1993. In 94, this is where we really saw the decline in Toyota start to set in. Three cars, with the addition of Tim Sugden joining Bailey and Hoy. Bailey finished 12th overall, Hoy 13th, no wins, no podiums, 7th overall in the standings. Just a complete drop-off from where they had been.
Yep.
For 95, they reverted back to a two-car outfit and dropped Hoy, and another disappointing year followed. An old car and a very strong field saw Bailey finish 9th overall, Sugden 14th, and they were once again winless and podiumless and 5th in the manufacturers. So they've gone from competing at the topper ends of the series for 4 years later, being in the doldrums, unfortunately for them. 1996, and Toyota withdrew as a manufacturer. The Carina was using the independence class and saw Lee Brooks take it to the top of the table, albeit only one competitor completed the full season, so it's difficult to really look at whether that was a success or not.
Yes, I won, but I was the only one here.
And then, to be honest with you, 1997 saw no entrant use a Toyota, and it would stay this way until 2000, where Jeff Kimber-Smith, remember the name, entered a Carina under a Class B entry, but only for two races. So again, you can't really look at that as a season they're involved in. They were then absent until 2011. That's a long time that they... But again, that ties into them going into F1, and, you know...
It also ties into how the touring cars were evolving at that stage.
And changing massively, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that less money was in the sport, so Toyota being the brand that they are, probably not going to see it as beneficial to them, certainly in the long run. And with the change in the regulations, we saw a drop-off in all manufacturers as well, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
With only really Vauxhall continuing pretty much all the way through.
What's interesting about that period of the 90s is that I would say they had two good seasons out of the full time they were there, you know, and again, they started strongly and dropped off quite a long way. I wonder if we'll see a similar theme in modern touring cars. So 2011, they came back to the grid with two separate independent entries. I'm going to talk about the independents. Obviously, they weren't Toyota backed cars, but we should look at Toyota coming back to the grid as an actual brand, as it were.
Invincis, wasn't it?
It was, and Frank Raffel completed a full season with completed a full season on his own, and Speedworks had a stop-start season with Tony Hughes. Raffel finished 10th in the independents following a slow start, but results improved as the season went on. So, again, it's difficult to judge when they first come into the series. Yep. Give that a yellow. 2012, we only saw two constructor entries across the whole of the series, neither of which were using Toyotas. That was MG and Dynamics, I think, from memory. The independence class, though, did feature the Japanese brand, with Raffel returning over at Speedworks. Three drivers contested the season: Adam Morgan for a full season, and a second seat shared by Paul O'Neill and Tony Hughes. Now, this, my mind obviously doesn't exist in this era of the sport, because Raffel managed two podiums and a win that season, which I don't remember any of that.
Dare I say, was that the season? I vaguely remember him running an Aventis in a orange and black
Dynapro.
Yeah.
But I don't really think he took a win.
I think that was that season. we knew at that point that the event series was gradually becoming more and more competitive.
Yes, no, I agree, but I don't remember Raffle. If I was to name,
it'd be a pointless answer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly that. Hughes, Morgan, and O'Neill all struggled with the Toyota event series. So again, I'm going to go out an orange overall. Yep. Some good, some bad. 2013, and oh boy, we're into the years of red. We're into the red years. Rafa remained over in Dynojet, and Speedworks went for Ollie Jackson and Dave Newsham. No podiums for anybody, and Rafa was the best finisher, 10th overall.
I wouldn't have been able to tell you that Rafa was in the championship for three seasons either.
No. I think it's also, you might say, well, 10th overall is not that bad, but this was an era where there were lots of independents, and it was a lot more up for grabs than it is today.
Yep.
As I said to you earlier, there's only two. Throughout this period, there's only two or three manufacturers in the series with the big money. Everybody else is running smaller outfits.
Yep.
Oh, those are the days where teams weren't struggling so much for money. Oh, those are the days.
Yeah, but you had a big variation of what cars there were as well. Anyway.
Happy days. 2014 saw Simon Belcher and a certain fresh-faced Tom Ingram enter independent Toyotas, whilst United Autosports entered three drivers across two events with James Cole, Glyn Geddie, and Luke Hines. Leah Wood entered a further event series. None of these drivers managed a podium. None of them managed top 10. And unsurprisingly, Ingram did the best by finishing 14th overall. So again, a poor, there's even more data here and nobody really did very well.
Yep.
But again, difficult, lots of new drivers to the sport, but I'm giving it a red overall.
Dare I say, and I know you're probably going to contradict this in a second, the event series was becoming an older car at this point as well. And the other cars that were in the series, we were gradually seeing more newer cars come in, cars that were working slightly better for the setup and the NGTC specs that we had.
I'm not going to completely contradict you. I'm going to slightly change your mind, maybe.
Okay.
In that, obviously, these weren't Toyota back teams. They didn't ever say over the drivers necessarily.
Yeah.
And has anybody there who I've mentioned... ignore Morgan because it's his first season in the sport.
Yep.
Will any of those go down in the annuals of British touring cars as amazing drivers? I'd argue probably not.
Ingram.
But we're going to get to Ingram and his success in the events as we go.
I understand. And the privateer or the independent entries that we had back then, very few of them were able to come in and hit the ground running and make.
Yeah, I mean,
make a name for themselves.
I'm going to suggest that you hadn't thought about Belcher, Hines, or Wood for a long time.
No, not really.
2015 saw the Toyota being driven by Belcher, Holland, Ingram, Gallagher, Gillam, and Lines. So the full carousel in full effect there. Ingram did well, though, with two podiums and 13th overall. Poor cars or poor drivers? Ties into what I just said a minute ago. It's hard.
It's almost like listing all the drivers for a team hard season.
Well, 2016 was even more ridiculous. We had Austin, Ingram, Epps, Hill, Smiley, Gillam, and Kane all have a go. Put in the carousel music there, please. But it was a far better season overall. Ingram finished 10th overall, taking two wins and four podiums. Austin finished 16th with three podiums. Hill scored well, finishing 16th overall, and the rest, well, they were there. yeah, you've got to say that's an orange season. Ingram started to show his skill in the series. But again, you've improved the field slightly with good drives along, with Austin and Hill, are both very good drives. And Smiley's a solid pair of hands as well. And now, if you're a Toyota fan, you'd be very happy. We're moving into the green eras. And this is what I'd say is the peak of their touring car era. 2017 saw the Toyotas piloted by Austin and Ingram. Isn't it amazing what two decent drivers can do? Ingram was third overall with four wins and five podiums. Austin 11th overall with a podium and a win. Good season. You can't argue that. For two independents, not bad at all.
And still at this point in an event series, which has been in the series since, 2011?
Yeah, when they returned,
So yeah, seventh season into it now, basically.
Yep.
They kind of worked around it.
Amazing what having a few good drivers can do for a car as well. 2018, we saw a one-car entry of Tom Ingram, who should have been the overall champion. That was the year of the knock-kill disqualifications and Russell's complete meltdown and nearly walking away from the sport entirely. He was second overall and lost out to Turkington by 12 points. He took three wins and six podiums, a superb effort and the best season for a Toyota by far, and I think ever, I'm going to argue, in touring cars. Despite being an independent, he ran a manufacturer-backed BMW Turkington incredibly close, and whether I need to calm down or not, he was a few results off being a champion.
Yep.
As an independent, which has not happened as far as I'm aware. Not a one-man team.
I would say Andy Jordan.
Oh, he took
the title in that Honda Civic.
I apologise. I always forget Andy Jordan.
Apart from that, I can't think of any others.
My apologies. I think you're bang on. 2019 was the first time since the 90s that we saw Toyota give manufacturer backing. So they were back in the sport as a manufacturer, and they moved on to the Corolla with Ingram as the sole driver that season.
Now, do you think that happened as a result of what Ingram had achieved just in that previous season? And they'd gone to Toyota and gone, right, look what I can do. Give me a brand new car and I can go and win your title.
I think as well, Toyota had by this point long shelved the F1 stuff.
Bear in mind, they weren't a manufacturer in this season.
Yes, they were. They were. 2019 was the first time since the 90s that they came back and gave manufacture back in.
But so, they were still under the Speedworks banner.
Speedworks with Toyota racing that season with the Ginsters.
Yes.
Livery, etc., etc. A steady season with a new car, sixth overall, four wins. They did finish bottom of the manufacturers, but with a single driver, that's not to be unexpected. Yep. So I've given that a green as well to come in and take wins in a brand new car.
Yeah.
With, you know, all the structural changes out behind the scenes with a manufacturer coming in as well. You've got to say, not bad overall. 2020 saw no change. Another decent season, fourth overall, three wins, eight podiums. Again, easily bottom of the manufacturers, but that could be explained away. So again, another green year for them. And then it all goes wrong in 2021. Ingram leaves.
Correlation.
He was replaced by Butcher and Smelt, and it was okay. Butcher managed seventh overall, taking three wins. Sam Smelt scored only twice. Bottom of the manufacturers again. Oh, and Ingram, that chap they let go, finished fourth in the Hyundai in his first season.
Yeah, and that comes off the back of Butcher being the independent champion in the Honda Civic from the previous season. So they've brought in a driver that they think has got good pedigree.
Well, he did. He does, yeah.
But it certainly wasn't as good as what went before.
I also think this is a danger when a manufacturer-backed team has an academy of drivers that they promise drives to, is that you can end up promoting somebody too soon or somebody who doesn't quite fit the series. And I think the fact that we've not seen Smelt anywhere near a touring car, let alone a racing car, actually.
I was going to say, he hasn't really done much motorsport since that season either.
And it's also, I mean, we're getting to driver welfare here. I think there's a lot of the F1 that they're getting their chances so young, and they make one mistake and that's it. I mean, you're seeing an F1 at the minute. Jack Doohan dropped after six. Colin Pinto could be dropped any day.
With a combination of Alpine and Red Bull over the last couple of seasons, then, you don't want to step one foot out of line, otherwise you get kicked to the curb.
Well, even someone like Zhao over at Sauber was given, you know, only two seasons previous worth.
Although he is now sitting as a Ferrari test driver.
But again, also Italian Jesus, Giovinazzi, I thought was probably better than he goes down as. But anyway, that's another chat for another day. So I do think there is a problem when you have an academy which you promise drivers a chance in Premier Series in, if they're not ready for that chance to come. And also, of course, no driver's going to say, no, I don't think I'm ready, because the revolving door doesn't come around again.
I think it's exactly the reason why Andrew Watson then went off to Toyota. Yeah. And the reason, yes, there were slightly more issues behind the scenes, but why Aaron Taylor-Smith has gone there this season as well. Mm. It's a manufacturer outfit. You expect it to have the budget there to be able to run the cars that you've got. And hopefully have the backing and the personnel there to be able to take the team to the top.
Absolutely. 2022 saw Smelt replaced by Ricky Collard. And again, Butcher was there too, who did well. Yep. Sixth overall, a win and eight podiums. Collard did better than Smelt, but no podiums. And Toyota, again, bottom of the manufacturer's table. And this is now the problem. They are competing on the same number of teams, because even though Hyundai may have four drivers, they can only nominate two for each round to score manufacturer points. Yep. Same with Napa, same with BMW, etc. So to be last of that, and to be honest with you, not really competitive either, was a problem. And 2023 was even worse. So they expanded to a three-car team, with Butcher and Collard joined by George Gamble. Collard finished highest in eighth overall, albeit of no wins and only a single podium. Butcher took a win, but otherwise struggled. And Gamble had an okay season, another season of regression. Bottom of the manufacturers again. That's three seasons. Well, actually, it's that since they've come back in, they've finished bottom. And okay, you take the two Ingram years
that
out.
It was a really tough season for them, and nothing seemed to go right. And they I know it seemed a throwaway comment, but they didn't really seem to have any luck either.
No, but you need you do need a little bit of luck in this series, of course, but you also make your own luck to a degree. Yeah. And just the free car expansion didn't really work.
No.
And drivers struggled to settle. I think it's fair to say.
Certainly did.
2024 saw a humongous change at the team with four cars run across two teams. Watson and Huff were in the flagship team with Josh Cook and Aidan Moffat in the sister team. Surely you'd think a good season. Four very good drivers. Yep. Well, you might argue very good, but I'd say four solid to good drivers. And
not just that, highly experienced drivers as well, three out of the four of them.
Yeah.
And you would expect them to be able to take part in the series and go, right, I can pull my knowledge from here and I can pull my knowledge from here, and we can work together, all four of us, four different lots of data, to be able to push the team forward. It just didn't seem to happen.
No, I mean, Cook finished the highest of everybody in sixth.
As he does.
As he does, with two wins and seven podiums. Huff finished next up in ninth with two wins and a podium on his BTC return. But I think the fact that he walked away straight away after one season tells you everything you need to know. You could
see the discontent at the end of
that
season.
He was so unhappy, yeah.
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 And you kind of knew where it was going to be going.
And if I say, if a World Touring Car champion comes back, wins two races, and still thinks the car's a mile off, that is damning, really. Moffat finished 13th with a win and a podium, and Watson 14th, failing to make good his debut season at PMR. Comes to be the worst of the four.
Yep.
Moffat, I know we've had Moffat arguments in the past, was so unlucky that year. He was constantly being collected by other incidents. It was an okay season, but once again, they were bottom of the manufacturers, and the rumblings and grumblings about the car, a mass exodus followed, retaining none of those four drivers for this season, which is crazy. Mm. To lose all four drivers is absolutely crazy. 2025, we've got four new drivers, a three-time touring car champion in Gordon Shedham, who has had the best time with a win. However, we have to be honest, and I'm sorry to degrade it, there's a massive whiff of fortune to it. It's a reverse pole position, and it's in the wet.
Interchangeable conditions, yeah.
Which is this, the complete leveller. So I have to be honest on that one. Did well, drove the race well, used his experience fine. But if it's dry, he's not winning that race, then it's as simple as that. Otherwise, we've seen newbies come through, and to be fair, they've done okay. Ronnie Pearson flattered to deceive and is out of the championship. We've got a new guy in who I'd never heard of, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah,
Dorling's done well.
Dorling's done well, and Taylor Smith
hasn't.
Really hasn't. He just hasn't picked up any of the form that he had from last season. He's had incidents along the way this season as well. And I don't know, the car just feels a bit of a handful, but also not quick. So,
yeah, I think this is the problem. I'm just going through here now. All the years I've mentioned there, I'd say they've had five good seasons as a car and the touring cars. And what is baffling is that, as we've learned today, as we've gone through the bits and pieces, they have had good history in Formula One, and they continue to be doing very well in WRC and WEC.
Yep.
So there's clearly not a problem with Toyota running a racing team, because they're running two very good racing teams in two disciplines, as you've discussed.
Yep.
But they are really struggling with touring cars at the minute, and arguably always have done. I think Ingram has had the best season for them in an Avensis, and he wasn't even technically a Toyota driver at that point because they weren't manufacturing. Since they've come back to the series, they haven't really, as I say, I'm not saying, right, let's just make this clear. To be successful, they don't have to win the championships. That's not...
No, but they have to be there towards the final couple of rounds
competing
and be in the running for it. Okay, maybe not even necessarily in the manufacturers, but at least have a driver up there in the drivers' championship who's going to be pushing all the other drivers to the end.
Yeah, and this is my problem with it, as I say. Success should never be measured in motorsport purely on who wins, because at the end of the day, it's like football. Only one team or one driver can win that cup. Doesn't mean if anyone else has been rubbish. It just means that only one can win it. But in Toyota's case, they haven't been in the drivers' championship since they came back in, really. Ingram, okay, in the Corolla, slightly mixed it at the top, but wasn't quite there. And they never pushed on from that. And okay, they lost a world-class driver, and you can't replace a world-class driver very easily. And as good as Butcher is as a driver, he's not as good as Ingram. I don't think that's going to be particularly contentious to say.
Nope.
And they've not built a team that gels particularly well since. They've either had too much inexperience.
Dare I say, I almost think that they've tried to push too far in, if that makes sense. So bringing it up to being a four-car team.
We even go to a three-car team.
Yeah. I think if they start to strip it back and bring it back to being a two-car team, yes, you're getting less data, but you're getting possibly less contradiction from only having two drivers' points of view rather than the four drivers' points of view, who may all have a different driving style as well.
Yeah, and I think with Shedden as well, and this is not me, I'm going to sound like I'm just hating on Shedden. I like Shedden, I really do, but is what he's used to 10 years ago or longer actually any help in today's touring car? He's not driven this era of car.
Yep.
With the hybrid and stuff. Yep. Okay, we've not got the hybrid now, we've got the boost. But is his knowledge of how to set a car up in the 2000s and 10s any help now in the 20s? I don't know if it is. It might, don't get me wrong, a race driver will always, like of his pedigree, will always have something to add. But actually, yep, are they better off saying goodbye to the past and focusing on...
He's still going to be able to give good, reliable feedback on how the car's reacting and stuff like that. But the real underlying thing this season is the car's not quick in a straight line.
No.
There is an underlying issue of the engine not being strong enough and not being right for that car. And yes, we've had new regulation changes agreed for 27 onwards.
They can just run a Ferrari engine, isn't it?
But are they going to get to 27?
And that's the big worry, isn't it? Because they are, and I think this is where we'll probably look to close closing thoughts. Obviously, they are still successful, as I keep mentioning, in other sports. Will there come a time when they go, do you know what, it's just not clicking in the touring cars, we're going to withdraw the manufacturer support and we're going to focus it on either going in back into F1, maybe going into Formula E, or putting more into WEC and WRC?
I do think that they're going to have that decision to make either at the start of 26, because they normally plan a season ahead, at the start of 26, whether they're going to continue into 27 with the new regulation change that's been announced, or whether they do just go, right, cut our losses, it's not working for us, we'll concentrate on what we are doing well, and then we lose a manufacturer from the sport. Yes, these regulations are designed to bring more manufacturers in and different variations of car.
And I think that I was about to say, that might be the thing that keeps them interested, is if they can bring a model into the UK to race, which they're not on sale in the UK, and I don't know off the top of my head if there are any.
I can't think of any.
But they might well be.
Yeah.
I think I've seen somebody suggest that the Toyota Corolla Saloon isn't available, or the new one isn't available here. Okay. But is abroad, which they could potentially race. But I don't know. I mean, I've not looked into that particularly. So that is a possibility. But I do think, there is a worry that if results don't improve, and let's be honest, they're not going to improve this season. Yeah, Shedden is at the worst point he's ever been in a series where he's competed the full round to this point. Thank you. And as I say, that's even been inflated of a win. If he didn't take that win, I mean, it's just not good enough. And they're just not close to the other manufacturers. They're so far off the other manufacturers. And again, you can't even say to them that they're competing sort of the gutsy underdog. This is Toyota Gazoo Racing. They've got such a presence in motorsport.
Yeah.
And people sometimes say, well, Napa are huge. How do you take on Napa? Yeah, Napa are huge, mainly in America. Napa aren't big over here. I never heard of Napa particularly until they joined the series.
So
they should be able to compete at the top, I think. And it's a shame they're not.
Yeah, do let us know your thoughts and feelings on how you see Toyota as a brand performing within motorsport, how you think they can rectify the issues that they're having in the touring cars over the last couple of seasons, whether you think they can actually bring it back and become a successful team, taking wins, challenging for the championships going forward, or whether you think they should actually cut their losses and step away from the touring cars. Yes, it would be a shame to lose a manufacturer of that ilk, but does it then open up opportunities for other manufacturers? There's loads of pros and cons to different cars and different manufacturers in the championship. And I think we're going to get that real shake up in 2027.
Agreed. And just finally, I am a bit of an Eeyore and I do often look at things on the negative side. Maybe I've been harsh on the whole situation. Maybe there's another way of looking at Toyota's participation in motorsport, in particular the touring cars, that we've missed. And if we have, that's fine. Comment below why you think we're wrong. Politely, we'll have a nice debate. I'm not, that's absolutely fine. But maybe we've got it slightly wrong in your view. Let us know.
Yeah, I must say as well, thank you for all the support that we've been getting recently. The comments on our posts on social media and the comments on the YouTube videos going forward, we read every single one of them and we try and respond to every single one as well.
Particularly on Facebook, if you want to get involved in a discussion, a chat, whatever, we always try and respond to comments on Facebook that are both polite and constructive. I mean, if they're just rude or ignore you. But this week in particular, we put the change to the regulation post up and we've had such good interaction with you guys on your thoughts, our thoughts, bouncing back and forward to whether what what we think this would be. And we should probably touch upon the regs when we do the preview for Croft.
The preview for Croft will be coming up very soon. Do get ready for the second half of the season, see whether Toyota are going to actually pull something out of a hat, but I doubt it. Let us know your thoughts in the comments down below. Don't forget to subscribe and get the bell on YouTube. Make sure you share us on all social media platforms with your friends. Let everyone know that wants to know. And
those who don't.
Merrier.
Yeah, and those who don't.
Yeah.